$35,000 narcotics offenses in the courts, and the tendency, when you got a jammed up situation like that, of course, is to let them come and plead. And they were taking lesser pleas. We had moved LEAA money to New York to set up a special narcotics court to alleviate this problem and to make sure that these narcotics violators, particularly pushers, are brought to prosecution for the narcotics offenses rather than the lesser offenses. And if this works in New York City, then where we have congestion that's contributing to this problem, we can do this in other places through making LEAA funds available.
Figure out a way to get more publicity focused on people when they're prosecuted too.
You covered briefly, but covered the provision with regard to those who take bribes.
All right, we've done some research on that in the last 2 days under the federal bribery. We don't know what we can do just yet. Bribery statute does have penalties just as severe as the Controlled Dangerous Substances Act, and that does go to policemen, BMD, and customs agents right now, so we're having to reassess that.
Mr. President, is it correct that it takes about $15,000 a year to support hard drug addiction?
In the United States, around $50 a day.
About $50 a day, $50 to $100, depending upon the market.
To show that, well, first, New York City is the first, I guess, prime example. The number, incidentally, there are probably many more who die of drugs than really ever into the public records, because the statistics are inadequate. Families don't want to know, et cetera, et cetera. You know, many, many people say died of natural causes of drugs and various types. But the number in New York City last year was over 1,000, sir. And that was probably heroin. 1,000 people died of heroin in New York City last year. Considered more, right, speaking of.
Mr. President, could I mention one thing?
Sure.
I'm very much interested in your firm statements that people in the administration, involved on this, wouldn't stay in the administration. We on the Commerce Committee watched this cigarette business over a period of 6 or 8 years. And we started out that even though the Surgeon General was very strong in his testimony about lung cancer, cigarettes cause. The medical profession seemed to be split as the years went on due to the adamant position of the Surgeon General and others in the other doctors and governors. That was reached the point where the tobacco people found great difficulty in finding an isolated doctor that would come before the committee and question the trouble with cigarettes. And it shocks me when you listen on television to a debate between a couple of doctors about whether marijuana is bad and whether it leads to anything or not. We have a lot of doctors in government, all through the administration, all through the VA, and they were set up. And I think even high school kids, the rest of us, everything that can be done with the Surgeon General and government doctors can be as adamant in this as it were in cigarettes, and we may be able to stop some of that.
Of course, I think we have to, in fairness say, the evidence is not conclusive on cigarettes.
Who can prove it?
Oh, you can prove by numbers and so forth. You're more likely, people that smoke cigarettes are more likely to have cancer than people that don't smoke cigarettes, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The evidence is not conclusive on marijuana. Marijuana is bad, but there are different many people who use it. They don't get addicted and they don't go on to whether it's a harder drug and so forth and so on. But the point is that there are some times when it's necessary to draw a line. I considered all this evidence. I read all these things. And I'm speaking as soft-headed psychiatrists that work in places like the National Institute of Mental Health come down on the domestic side because basically they're probably all on the stuff themselves. And so, as far as I'm concerned, I don't think yes, take a hard line on that issue. It will be considered square, and et cetera, et cetera, but I think it's right, and I think you've got to. You start moving across that line. Now, I don't mean by that somebody smoked marijuana. They become hard criminals, so forth. As far as, for example, Philadelphia, your district attorney up there has an excellent program. I very good. I know it's the program of the they have a set of indictments before the indictment. They bring them in and put them on probation before indictment, so that you're young people who just are out on the plane, they get caught into the web. They do not have a criminal record if they behave themselves more a period after that.
That's a very good thing.
If you're thinking of it, so a kid is out somewhere and somebody gives him a marijuana cigarette and he smokes it, and then he gets caught, so he gets in, he becomes a criminal record for life, and there's a pending job and all the rest is the way to handle it. This is enormously effective. They also did get the courts club locked up.
True, and an inspector's program is one of revocation of probation.
But what I'm simply saying is that, I know I'm sounding hard line. Say, why don't we wait all the evidence? Well, we'll wait 100 years before all the doctors agree on this. We're not going to wait. It's a problem, because it is a problem in the sense that when you put those that cross the line, the drug culture, then a percentage of those that cross that line go further is infinitely greater than those that don't cross it. So they're not going to cross it with our help. That's the way it requires the federal government.
Mr. President, as far as the financing of the program is concerned, Frank, I hopefully agree with you on this. I think it would be a good idea to submit a supplement for fiscal 71 on the whole thing, and not just the part that is not in the DOD, because if the DOD has that kind of money that it could reprogram, they better hold on to it for fiscal 72, because they're going to need it for the purpose. And for this purpose, Frank, in a supplemental, there's no problem. You'll get the whole amount without any reduction. Just see if you're looking down the road, you better hold on.
Well, the market is so far as 4 months ago, and it'll all be approved. But no telling of any program. One thing I should emphasize that, because I mentioned this marijuana and so forth, the whole administration is completely together on this. I mean, Richardson, AGW, John Mitchell, all of us, we've all agreed that that's the line we're going to take. That's why the White House control is so essential. It's going to be given the same central direction and control that the cancer program is going to have. I consider that important. Well, it needs to be more important.
Well, it's important too, from the standpoint of cutting out this rivalry between certain agencies.
Yeah,
this is very bad.
Oh, of course. Well, in the prosecution field.
Well, I will talk about customers and narcotics. Until they've had a rivalry of who can do
fighting for years, and they spend more time fighting each other than fighting the dope traffic.
I don't know if this White House position will clear that up, and that's been serious.
Could you give us, Mr. President, the reaction of the ambassadors to meeting with
you? I was here, so they had to react to the problem actually with regard to an ambassador credit to another country is always how does he get along with the other country, the relation between that country and this country, and how does he also carry out a program which is might be detrimental to those relations, particularly because it would cause hurt feelings and so forth and so on. But to the ambassadors, I said that I considered of higher priority than trying to work out the relations with this or that with the other country, stopping this traffic. That they had to put that at the highest priority, that they were informed. members. We're the customers. It's an interesting thing about teacher instructors, they don't use the stuff. I mean, they're smart, they grow it, but they don't use it, because they know what it'll do. But nevertheless, ambassadors in this instance know, and they know very clearly after the meeting. I think they know that previously, but on an individual basis, now they know on a collective basis, the State Department knows at all levels that I consider this the highest priority, and therefore, we have to put it first and put it above the fact, well, now how can I do something that's going to make the Prime Minister feel good today? Which, of course, is the natural attitude of ambassadors. We consider this, like we talked, even more important than textbooks. Which is another problem. So, we would like to go, let's say, for this is, talk drugs before, I've had this come 2 years ago, and the first briefing, everybody's home, I say, most people hear the tragic stories against the American people generally are very, very, very strongly in support of this kind of program. But I think it's important to bear in mind two reasons. One, the interest of the program has been heightened by disclosures with regard to American servicemen in Vietnam. To make no greater mistake than to think that that was because before Vietnam, the problem is national. The problem is in young people generally. The problem is in non-service people as well as service people. The problem is in service people in Europe as well as in Vietnam. And it's our responsibility, wherever we get young people, wherever they are, whether they're in Germany or whether they're in Europe or wherever they are in other parts of Vietnam, to do everything that we can to send them back after their period of service drug-free. That's what we're trying to do. And this, we think, is a very great goal, very worthwhile. As a matter of fact, I really believe that with this program, we're going to be able to take a lot of people who go through the service. This will be after Vietnam is over, to go through the service, who come in, as Avery pointed out, with some exposure to drugs. This will be the case, as he says, approximately 50%. And his figure, at least, that's the number he's given so far. And has some exposure to drugs, I understand, not heroin, necessarily, and probably not, but there's others. But I think part of the whole process of the service should be to have an educational program to indicate the danger, and second, a program that is really tough with regard to the hard drugs, finding out if they're on them, dry them out, send them out as the right, as drug-free as possible, and after that, VA service for those who have.
Mr. President, I'd like to encourage you, I don't know whether you will or not, to go on television and tell the people that this is a national problem. This is your program.
Well, it's a very important
It's smart. But those that are for the drugs have to read the time.
That's right.
But when anybody that's for drugs, at least some are.
Well, particularly at the CDC. The difficulty is that I'm going to be, when I speak to the AMA, I'm really going to take the hide off of them. See, the doctors themselves, of course they all, but the doctors can do a lot more. We all remember our family doctor, Ulysses, he's scared you to death, if nothing more, and also, but the doctors, no doctor's going to prescribe heroin, but on the other hand, he can take a lot, an attitude towards marijuana, he can take an attitude towards other drugs, and frankly, the doctors have gone overboard in prescriptions. They really have, in my mind. They go completely overboard, the ups and downs and so forth. There's a lot of those by prescription. You get people hooked on those things, and then they move right on down the line to something else. And the medical profession bears a great deal of responsibility. The pharmaceutical profession, industry bears a great deal of responsibility for letting a lot of this stuff out so easily. I reckon now we're referring here, what you see, the other drugs that want to be mentioned in your questions and amendments and the rest, they can be pretty bad too. Even at withdrawal symptoms, people can die after withdrawal, second of all, in these sections, but they continue to many. So we really got to, we've got to get the thing under control in that field. And we're going to try to enlist them among many others to be of assistance.
Mr. President, with the Nancy Whalen amendment coming out this week, set the date for getting out of Vietnam, I can imagine that there will be an argument based on the word that has gotten out through the press that the airmen in South Vietnam has been somewhat less effective on keeping airmen from the American troops or from actually the open market. Do we have any word on this as to whether or not they have actually been ineffective?
No, the government is taking this on a very the president to the state that our suggestions to the problem did not arise in Vietnam until about 1969. And some of you know, and Laos, other places, and, but the EU has been cooperative to bring their team. There are, of course, as always, where any kind of traffic like this is involved, or people in government, and Vietnam, and so forth, are involved, but they can hold cases and the government of Vietnam, in one case, and Turkey, in the other, you can move on those people who have been involved. One was a black chief in the family out there, a brother of the prime minister, Kim, or something, was involved.
One terrible story that I read about bending sands on the road between Saigon and Bien Hoa, where you can just pull up and buy heroin. I'd like to buy ice cream cones.
Well, I think that was a story they have moved on in Brazil. We've put tremendous pressure on this in the last 3 or 4 months.
It was still five 2 weeks ago without any problems.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Well, we can, we're going out of $1 million when you talk to the FOIL at that point, Carter says so. But it was like the beautiful last days in the church. We went to Cambodia, I said we would be out in 60 days. We were out in 60 days, get the sentiment of the day and so forth and so on. We say, get out in 60 days. What does it mean?
Not a goddamn thing. Except the Senate wanted to say, we got him out.
And that the work really kept him from, in this case, sir, we have to understand that we understand the desire of the people to be out of Vietnam. We all know this, and a lot of your people do want to get out. They'd like to be out of the air to start the real question, of course, is whether or not they believe we are getting out. What we are going to accomplish in the way that we have accomplished. That sounds actually what I have. I think you've accomplished a job kind of that close.
Some of these people have just hold on to the fingernails, I suspect.
Sure.
There is an intention to lay down closure Monday, the 21st. Closure, yes, sir, and Stennis. Will sign it. I believe he already has signed it. Bob and I have signed it. And Stanley says he has not been turned down yet by any of his Southern Democratic colleagues in going along. He's going to one by one. He may be short some on the first cloture, and if so, I would expect a second one to follow pretty soon. That'll be cloture on sale and all amendments there too, if Stanley sticks by the president in spread.
Honorable McGovern, have to just to brief those who in the Senate who haven't had been approached by yet the Vietnam veterans against the war, very nice, well behaved, idealistic kids back in town. They're approaching two or three or four at a time to talk to the Senate. The ones that I had in yesterday couldn't be nicer kids, great kids. Some of them special forces, some of them been fat pilots. Yeah. I mean, they've been there. And their pitch at the moment is that the date isn't as important as it is to stop the war. And I said, that's very easy. How do you do that? And their feeling very strongly is that once we get out, the Vietnamese effort to try and defend themselves will probably go down the drain. And that what should be done is some kind of an urging for some sort of coalition government. I'm not saying that I can sure the word they said, but this is the pitch that they're making. And it's going to be pretty persuasive because they've been there for quite a long time. Have fairly intimate connections with the Vietnamese guys, well, not the generals, not the presidents. So they are very handy too and handy people. And I think they may make some impressions on the
And on this front, we've only lost seven Republicans so far. They are.
That's pretty uncertain. Henry, I think they wanted you to spend, would you like to spend a brief time on, the House caucus coming up, it might be of interest to Terry, who would give you
Mr. President, I think I should say something about my own position as my vote is a doubtful. If I vote for the Anthony McGovern, it'd be a bitter choice. That being my thing, I just can't get back in there. We may be different because I'm the only Republican left in the whole damn area. But our people just wanted out of there. This narcotic department in Vietnam is the one that's worried and held up. Bismarck, well, the full city of North Dakota is the worst place for it. For a marijuana. I think if my heroin is diseased, they can't change here. They even smuggle a regular package of cigarettes. okay, but I'll give you a hell lot of credit for not having pulled out more than what you accomplished on that program. But I'd like to know about the answer. I haven't made up my mind completely yet, but, and no one has contacted my government, has done that, and nothing, Vietnam, not a soul has contacted me. But I have been out in North Korea.
I understand that, the problems all you have, personally. I'm sure someone who understands that. But you'd be quite lucky before Henry began, so. Why don't I do it? Why not be a hero with the nice editorials of the New York Times and CBS and NBC? Why not let our Republicans and others feel well that we got out now and so forth? But what we have to realize is that first what we found and what we have accomplished, and it's built a very generous economy. We found 550,000 Americans there. We found 350 dying every week, and as a result of very strong, we adopted a new policy, and it's a very, very strong action, the action in Cambodia was last year, the action in Laos this year. Your cash use last week for 19. You're averaging around now, that's tremendous. The fight is, that's 1/10, 1/15 of what they were, the cash use is down. By November, the number in Vietnam has been reduced by a factor of 2/3. And now you come to the key question of why didn't we get out right then? And that's the whole point. Why have even 19 a week died in this crazy time? And that then has to get down to a judgment that only the president can make. Well, anybody else can make it, but he's the only one that's going to be held accountable for it. This is what will serve the interest of the United States, what will serve the interest of peace in the long run. As I've often said around here, in the event, first, that a deadline is voted, any deadline, that is a vote by the Congress to stop negotiations. Cold turkey, nothing else. I talked to David Bruce about it, and he says, if the Congress votes the deadline, he says, bring me home right away. So that says there's nothing to do, nothing to negotiate. Of course there isn't. You can't tell the enemy, look, I'm going to get out. And now, let's continue to negotiate. Well, what do we negotiate about? Well, we'll negotiate about how many ships are going to leave and all that sort of thing. What do you do about ceasefire? How do you protect your main people? What do you do about well, I know some of the resolutions say we will get out, provided they will do this and that on the legal judges. That's a matter you've got to negotiate. Or we'll get out, provided they will not harass us and give us a ceasefire during the period we're getting out. How do you do that unless you negotiate? So my point is that if the Congress says that as the date's turn, the United States leaving because that certainly expresses a desire that all of us, in fact, the day certain should have been, and we got the day we got in. But if it expresses it now, it is an expression. Stop the negotiations, bring home the investors, and just get out. The day certain, as a matter of fact, is voted. You just have to figure that we will have no option but to speed it up. We're voted by the Congress because they'd be in our, out of our minds to simply leave them there as sitting ducks with the enemy knowing that regardless of what he did, we were going to get out at a certain date. Negotiations would be dead, the enemy would have free ride, he'd know exactly what we were going to do, and that's the way it would work. The other side of the coin is, and I'll let Henry expand upon this just a bit, is this, that why do we see it through? Well, very frankly, I can tell you that, I have never misled anybody around this table either, and I could have misled the bipartisan leaders. Let me remind you of something. And I want all of you, I don't want any of this mentioned outside this room, what I'm just saying now. But I want to remind you of something. And then as the summer goes on, and the rest of the year goes on, remember that I said this now. A week before we made the joint announcement with regard to Brezhnev and I, in effect, committing ourselves to seeking a limitation on offensive and defensive missiles.
Fulbright, the New York Times, and I'm just picking out a few, and one editorial, Fulbright and Speed, several columns had articles on salt. The whole thrust of them was summed up by Fulbright when he says, I don't read the papers anymore about salt because nothing is happening. Now, something was happening. It had been happening for a long time. On January the 9th, I sent a message out to the Soviet leaders. I worked on it for months, and something happened. Now, don't underestimate the power of this office, and don't underestimate what we may be doing. Now, with regard to Vietnam, I don't tell anybody around this table that something is happening, that something will happen for sure. I can only say that there is a chance for negotiation. That chance will one day be gone as the number of Americans there receive the incentive of the enemy to negotiate after a certain point will go, but it's still there. As long as that chance to negotiate is there, a chance for the United States to negotiate a settlement with a ceasefire for our POWs and on a basis where maybe our friends who, everybody is of course an expert of what's going to happen in Vietnam after we go, on the basis where Vietnam will not be taken over by the communists. If that happens, that will be worth doing. The point is that what we offer here is something quite unusual. We offer on the one side, one that we're negotiating and trying to beat any deadline. We may not succeed. Probabilities are certainly, you would say, if you look at the papers, if you follow everything, past conduct, up and down, hopes up and down. But I've never raised hope, I'm not raising them. I'm simply saying we're trying. And don't underestimate what we may do here and in other fields. Whoever's expected we were going to do anything, for example, in China, don't underestimate what will happen there either. What I'm saying in this case regarding negotiation, you have two things. One, we're negotiating. But second, if negotiations do not succeed, we have a plan. It is an effect. It will be carried out. We have kept every promise with regard to withdrawal. I have said we will withdraw all Americans from Vietnam, consistent with our objectives. So, the real question here, does the Senate want to vote lack to have a vote of no confidence in the president? That's all it is. Let me tell you, people who vote for this amendment aren't going to look good 2 months from now. Now forget that I made a prediction. People will not look good. Just as those that said that there's no progress in salt didn't look very good following week. Those that say there's no progress in Berlin may not look too good. They may look very good. You know, it's always good to predict the worst. But let's suppose that something happened on Berlin. Don't underestimate what I might do. That's just what I'm suggesting.
President, may I ask a question here? Some of the charges made, one charge we'll have to meet is that nothing's going to happen in the White House until after the October elections in Vietnam. I know that's specious, but how do you recommend it, the answer?
Well, simply recommend that there's plenty of fabrication. We just bring Bruce home right now and have him say, look, not only in the Bruce area, but in every other possible area, through the State Department, through the White House, and through so forth, we are exploring the negotiating channel on this issue. And as far as we're concerned, not only this election, but the next year, the ridiculous side of the committee. We didn't want to re-end it this year so that we could end it next year. Now, that's what we got.
I set him up on chandelier.
That was great. Now, my point is, as far as the South Vietnamese elections, as far as the White House, the State Department, Bunker, with whom I met yesterday, will be against the days, Bruce, with whom I met last week, their highest priority is being given to all negotiating channels with regard to POWs, with regard to ceasefire, with regard to all of the things that we proposed last year.
You know that he brought in your religion, but we argued for two columns in the congressional record on whether you had a right to say that you were invoking your Quaker heritage in a political aspect. And I said every member of the Pennsylvania Society of Friends came down here and demanded the end of the wall was invoking his Quaker heritage in a political framework.
Mr. President, you may be interested in a conversation lesson I had with the speaker yesterday. We went to discuss the matter that's coming on the floor of the House. The speaker said he would fight any day certain on this ground. Number one, you had made various commitments for withdrawal and you lived up to every one of them. You had said that in the case of Cambodia, our troops would be out by a day certain. That had been accomplished as promised. Explained in reference to Laos. The speaker is going to support us in fighting the Nancy Whalen Amendment, and I think it's important that he believes that you are living up to every commitment and will help us in every way possible.
Let me say that having been to, I am very sympathetic with people who want to win for anything, because I know you're reflecting what your people want. Your people want to get out. And they are concerned about all these intricacies. They say, well, gee, that's going to go to it. They say, why did he go in the first place? I understand all this. What I am simply saying is that I have to make considered judgments on whether the interests of our fighting men, their security, of our foreign policy and objectives insofar as they will be served by not allowing a cottage table over there at this point. I have to make the decision in the heart of the line. And I simply say once again, I made no promises because sometimes all the plans we worked on, nothing comes from. 3 months from now, remember what I said on this day. Those that voted wrong, insofar as this particular concern, and by wrong, I mean those that voted a lack of confidence, are going to have to take the responsibility for saying, well, we didn't think you'd do it. We didn't think you'd accomplish it. More is happening, something can happen, we're not sure. We may not get a negotiation, we may not get progress with the Soviet, we may not get any further progress with the Chinese and so forth, but there's much more going on than many of you know. I can't tell you what's going on, because if I did, that would destroy the chance of swing. That's again the reason why you can't do this. You as a lawyer, all of you know, you can't discuss the public about the process there, but I mean, and people say, well, why don't we discuss what Clifford is makes some suggestions. But we have dealers like that 3 times a day around here. You don't discuss it. It's better to stay and spend just a little time on this subject if you like to.
But I can't do that very much towards the tendency, President. I think it is very counterproductive at this moment to speculate about negotiations publicly, either in favor or in unfavor. I think what we need above all is to give the President an opportunity to do what he wants to do. It's almost as bad to say publicly the facts of the matter earlier this year, everybody was ridiculing the administration at the time of the Laos operation, the end of the Laos operation. We were giving a whole series of background this year to various members of the press. Everybody was ridiculing us for our ridiculous faith in negotiations. Everybody said, well, it is clear there won't be any negotiations, so just get out. Now, our opponents are suddenly remembering that we are going to negotiate. If you look at what the administration has said and done since we've come into office, no one has pushed negotiations more energetically. And as the President pointed out, whenever we choose to reveal the record of what in fact has been done, we are we want to conduct that negotiation with Hanoi, not just Black River, or with any, or the Washington Post. If we get into the debate, and if you set a deadline, then the next question is 13 months, 8 months, 14 months, 7.5 months, 6¾, all of it in the press. As somebody who has participated in negotiations, in reading the cables now since 1966, and has read every record of every conversation that has been made to me, North Vietnamese are my specific problem. They'd like to give the impression that negotiating with us is like a detective story in which they throw out vague clues and we have to guess at the answers. And then they count on the American masochism to assume that somehow or other they dropped the little thing somewhere, we fail to pick it up, and then we flagellate ourselves because we hurt their feelings. Now, if you watch, if they want something, then they have 8 points, 5 points, 13 points, they vary every year. And they keep repeating those points day after day after day after day. Now their negotiating trick is this. Their negotiating trick is to get us to say what we will do in return for their willingness to discuss. I was part in 1967 of a negotiation. They are no secrets anymore because they're all in the New York Times. I understand that one is going to be it's going to be published in one of the next installments, in which they kept dangling a bombing hole in return for what they then called constructive talks. And everybody said, well, why don't you try it? And they never defined what they meant by it. You could always go back to bombing. Now, the trouble is that if one engages in this process, they'll never talk. They will then bank that particular concession and go on to the next and then go on to the next one. Their tactic is to keep building so much, to wring out of us, to bring us to such a state of psychological exhaustion before the negotiations ever start, that they have their whole quid pro quo and we then have to go on to something else. They've already laid the groundwork for that in the conversation of Thomas Roberts with Tuan Thuy, where Tuan Thuy now doesn't even talk about deadline anymore. Now he talks about military and economic aid. And no doubt they have another set of demands when. So our problem is to get them to talk to us. Not to emissaries, not to peace groups, not to Thomas Roberts, but to us. We've got, they know the channels, and they know we're not sitting passively near the telephone waiting. They know we are exploring it. But they are trying to get around the only people on our side who have the authority to enter. So then the problem is to convince them that they won't do any better anywhere else. The second problem is, for the first time in the negotiations, to make them give a quid pro quo in a serious frame. Now, the reason we feel so strongly about this now is because we have, through a combination of factors, a constellation of events, and this is what the press is talking about. Not so much that anything is necessarily going on now, but we have a constellation of events which makes it possible that they will want to negotiate. I won't go into them in enormous detail, but let me just enumerate some of the facts. One, the military situation in Vietnam. Who would have thought it possible 2 years ago that we could withdraw over 300,000 troops, as we've done up to now, and improve the military situation in the process, so that our casualties are laid down and the security within South Vietnam has, in fact, enormously improved. So as they look at the military situation in South Vietnam, it isn't self-evident to them that they'll be better off 2 years from now, which is really involved by waiting us out through the 72 elections, that they'll be better off 2 years from now than As you would have to expect, they have lost a minimum of 700,000 to 800,000 men, which is something that we lost 8 million men. No one who's gone south has ever come north again. We're not talking about 700,000 to 800,000 dead. I'm not talking that there must be almost equal, probably an equal number of wounded. Certainly, if they look at the international situation through the eyes of Vietnamese suspiciousness and communist paranoia, they can't know what's going on in our relationships with communist China and the Soviet Union. All they can see is that there are a certain number of steps being taken to ease relationships. Again, I'm not saying anything going on. We'd rather talk about things after they've happened. All I'm saying is if you sit in Hanoi, in a communist world where every leader has gotten to the top by double-crossing the people who helped him in his career, there's no reassurance that Peking can give them that they could possibly believe. Even if Peking isn't doing anything. The same with Moscow. So their nightmare has to be that they will become a backwaters, an insignificant little country in Southeast Asia while tremendous things are being settled all around us. And we have a number of indications for the first time in quite a while that they are thinking very seriously of the problem of negotiations. There are many, I'm saying they're looking at it, I'm not saying they're doing it. I don't want to go into those in great detail, but you can find certain softenings in formulation. Some of the speeches they are making, some of the boilerplate speeches they're making have a slightly different character. Now they have a tremendous decision to make for themselves. They fought for 25 years, and there's no settlement that we cannot, I don't believe any American, not even while the opponents actually want us to turn over the government of Saigon to them. Many of them make proposals which have the practical consequence of bringing this about, but no one has yet advocated this to the director. Well, for them, the big decision is, are they willing to leave any political structure that they don't control in being? The other issues, the military issues, are most obvious. Well, that's a tough decision for them to make. And I'm sure they're going through an enormous domestic process. And this is where what we do here is of such crucial consequence. If they see that we are not stampeded, if this vote, for example, really comes out the way you think, that is, if they see that over the year the McGovern-Hatfield vote did not erode against us, if they see that whatever the speeches may be on the essential, they're not forcing us, then I think in the next 3 or 4 months, something may happen. As far as we're concerned, that has nothing to do with the Vietnamese election, except that the Vietnamese election may put a slight pressure on the North Vietnamese to get something done before the election. But not to speculate on that either, it is not a fact in our negotiation now of the deadline. We have our program, as the President pointed out, and we have kept to it. We have maintained our aid all the time. We have increased it and extension. And we've never reduced it. But to them, getting all our troops out, that is not just our doing. It's taking it to announce all over South Vietnam that we are going to do it. That is of tremendous importance. It is one of the biggest bargaining cards we've got. And therefore, for us to give this away in advance of negotiation, and on top of it, to give it away as an act of the Senate or the Congress, would run directly counter to the conditions that I have described. in an extremely delicate situation. We are in a position, which as the President pointed out, where we can, and frankly, the less we say about that on the outside, the better we'll like it. Where we can perhaps feel our way towards it. Now, and I must say one other thing. If you look at the history of negotiations with the North Vietnamese, they don't negotiate as we do. The Westerner thinks of negotiation through a process in which gradually the two sides are brought closer together. The North Vietnamese think of negotiations as a process which reflects reality, in which they first try to exhaust their opponent psychologically to make sure that they have wrung every possible concession out of them, and then they suddenly move. We talked about the site of the conference for weeks, and for 6 weeks was settled in 3 days. We talked about the bargain hall for 6 months, it was settled in a week. We talked about the shape of the table for 2 months, it was settled in 3 days. Now, I'm not saying that anything like this is coming. All I'm saying is the President has pointed out from the first day here, when the break comes, it will come suddenly. And you will not be able to tell it through complicated negotiations. I don't want to mislead you. I'm not saying we have any indication now in which we know that a break is coming or anything of the kind. All we're saying is the factors are in play in such a way that it is essential that for the next month we be given a chance. And this is why the President has been so insistent on leaving that one factor in our negotiating position open. And I must say, really, that all of this business about our missing this chance, missing this signal, really childish. And the only thing that keeps us from slaughtering it is because we're playing a bigger game. This is what we are against it precisely to give us an opportunity to take a crack at negotiating this, but to do it in the only way that will work, that the President has taken the heat that's involved in standing up against all these gimmicks that are floated from time to time.
Mr. President, I don't think some of these are gimmicks. Most of these proposals, I say most, have come from the other side of the aisle. And if a date certain will end negotiations and thereby destroy any possibility of solving a war more quickly, then I'm not so sure some of our people on the other side of the aisle aren't doing it for that purpose. And to end the possibility of any real solution more quickly. This has been done before. I think some Democrats back in 1930, 31, 32 were just as happy to make sure the country went into economic chaos. I'm not so sure some of them, I'm not saying all of them by any means, but some of them, I think, just as soon have no negotiated settlement, so this thing might drag on longer and longer and longer. And I think we ought to be practical and realistic about this from a political point of view. These are more serious than gimmicks. These are aimed in the minds of some at prolonging the war for purely political purposes.
Well, if you want to look at it politically, you could say that, too, that people like to be competitive. They know, as they do know, that we will end the war, as far as we're concerned. But they like to get on just a little bit ahead. So they say we know. Now, let me just sum it up, because I'm going to conclude this, so we can. One, I have to give you my considered judgment that there is a chance. I do not say how much of a chance, because no one knows.
have a negotiation. There would be then nothing to deter me from indicating what our plan were to withdraw. We just bring Mr. Bruce on and so forth. But as long as there's a chance for negotiation, put yourself in my position. I have to run it out. Because a negotiated end of this war would be infinitely better for our POWs, for our men, the safety of our servicemen, for the future of South Vietnam. That's to go the other way, which we're prepared to go, of simply a long way of withdrawing our men on a phased basis, as we will. So what we're saying here, in effect, and let's not, Jerry raised a point, but I do know that there are several voting for these amendments both in the House and the Senate who are doing so for other reasons. Bill touched upon one, and I understand that's really true. Let us understand, as far as the fact is concerned, if you look at this, that I would have to say, sitting from where I am, that a vote to set a deadline is a vote to destroy any chance for negotiations. I'm giving you my considered judgment. There is a chance. If you want to destroy it, vote for a deadline. Second, in terms of what your option is, if you vote against the deadline, then of course people say, well, he wants to vote for a prolongation of the war. And I see that. Because I know you read the polls, 80%, 90% of the people would say, let's end the war tomorrow. It's maybe 95%. We all understand that. Most of us, however, were sent here not to follow the polls of the leader. And I would only suggest that, in this instance, that your choice is a pretty good one. All that I can say is that I don't ask for blind trust for this little story in the New York Times about what presidents say and what they plan and so forth, you know. But I do say that based on the record, we've done pretty well in foreign policy. We're doing a lot more than appears in the surface. And those who vote against the president on this particular issue are going to have to carry the responsibility of being against the president on the other issues to deal with foreign policy. Because, you see, you cannot separate parts of this mosaic. The effect of this vote on Moscow, on Peking, etc., etc., and others, they take away. So I'm simply saying that this particular area, we give you a pretty good choice. One, a chance for negotiation. Second, you're saying, in effect, by voting against it, you're saying, no, we're not voting anymore because the president has offered a plan which he is implementing and which he has pledged to bring off to end the war if we don't get an investigation and a negotiation. So there it is. I think it's a pretty good choice. I think, in other words, you've got a pretty good option to come down to it. It's terribly tempting. I know it. And if I were to talk to individuals, I have a hard time saying to a guy that goes, he wrote this way and that way, and I'm not going to attack their courage or their motives or anything else. That's up to them. But I do know, looking at it from a pretty cool political standpoint, we are giving you, and will be giving you, a pretty good record of voting to run on in this meeting. One last point with regard to the war, just an aside with regard to these, this is what I'm kind of saying. If you're asking about that, my answer is that there certainly is. I'm not going to say about most of your question. This is an interfamily fight, not involving us. And these reports all, and of course, as you know, this report that was a Pentagon study, which was completed in 1968. And a Pentagon official had some level, apparently, took out the boxes full of files and turned them over to the New York Times. It was a contingency study, but it's a fight within the previous administration as to what first should be done in Vietnam and so forth. It's a fight which we have to part. What does concern me, though, is the massive breach of security. I don't care if it was the worst president in the
country's history, no matter what it is, but to have top secret documents turned over to a newspaper, and to that newspaper have the irresponsibility of publishing, in my view, is something that we have to, of course, react to. As far as we're concerned, it's no skin off our back. As I pointed out, that we had all these documents, and we had a great number of studies, but we made our own independent study because we thought we needed a new policy when we came in. I would just simply say one. Who are these people that are talking about what we're going to do? Vance, Clifford, all the rest. These are the guys that made the previous policy. These are the fellows that made the previous studies. They're the ones that got us into this war. And I think that when people get you into the mess, you don't look to their advice, you get you out. Now that's what we're doing. We're getting this war ended on a basis the previous administration was unable to bring about. And as far as we're concerned, we are carrying it out as well as we can. We are not playing politics with it. I don't attack the previous administration. We could be very gleeful about the fact that Johnson, for example, had before him a contingency plan. He may not have had it before him, I'm not so sure, but at least the Pentagon, according to the papers, had studied a plan for bombing. At the time that he was saying, 64 campaign regarding Barry Goldwater, I will never send our boys to fight a war Asian voyage. So that reflects on him. Why don't we take him on? Why don't I take him on? For the very reason that in a government, there are contingency plans. I don't know what his motivations were. I don't know what came to his intention. But I do know that as far as this particular thing is concerned, it doesn't do the country any good to cast great, great, serious doubts in the institution. That's the reason I'm taking
it. But these people remind me of the fellow who killed his father and mother and threw himself on the mercy of the court on the ground that he was an orphan.